don't frighten us by telling us the facts, 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 the facts. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as war itself. We must apply ourselves to our task with the same resolution, the same sense of urgency, the same spirit of patriotism and sacrifice as we would show were we at war.
For 91.3 FM, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on February 3rd, 2019, and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Nate and Rachel joined me to discuss U.S. tax proposals to curb inequality, and then the deranged reaction of billionaires to the proposals. That's all coming up on Arsenal for Democracy. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me in studio again this week is Nate. Hello, Nate.
Hey, Bill.
And joining us on the line from Idaho, as always, is Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Nate.
We're going to be talking this week about some of the various tax proposals that are making the rounds in the United States from various political figures and some of the reactions that we've seen to those. Basically breaks down into sort of, I would say, three central pillars, and then so far we haven't seen much in the way of a fourth one yet, although I would imagine that's coming soon. We have marginal income tax rate increases at the top, wealth taxes, which as opposed to income is actually taxing the pool of wealth, estate taxes, taxing the wealth after you die, and then if you were to add sort of a fourth central item, that would be a capital gains tax. So we wanted to talk about that. Let's start out by talking about Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's proposal for a marginal income tax rate. Rachel, take that for us.
Okay, so yes, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has recently proposed a 70% marginal tax rate on income, earned income over $10 million. And this has kind of created a media like flurry, basically. And it seems to be driven by the pundits just kind of saying, oh, wow, this is so revolutionary and shocking. Like, isn't everybody shocked? And a bunch of conservative pundits just misrepresenting what a marginal income tax is. They're trying to say that she wants to take 70% of everybody's income, no matter what level of income you're at, and just generally Grover Norquist kind of compared it to slavery. Like it kind of buys into that whole taxation is theft meme that conservatives keep trying to push. There was a recent Jacobin magazine article that said, despite bipartisan beliefs to the contrary, Ocasio-Cortez's radical agenda, quote unquote, is surprisingly popular. When pollsters asked about her 70% tax proposal, 59% of registered voters, including 71% of Democrats, 60% of independents, and 45% of Republicans said they backed it. It also mentioned, the left has a powerfully simple moral retort to the right's bogus theft claim. An additional dollar is more valuable to a poor person than to a rich person. People who don't make as much money will spend any available income they can get, whereas the wealthy tend to hoard their wealth and hide it and stash it and not spend it at all, where go through that multiplier effect where when you spend money, it kind of rebounds throughout the economy and benefits multiple people. If you're hoarding it, you can't experience that multiplier effect. It also pointed out Bill Gates and his ilk probably wouldn't notice if their bank accounts were $10,000 lighter, but most Americans sure would, especially since they're not likely to even have that much in savings. The difference between being able to buy another yacht and being able to afford health insurance is a clear one, and we should insist that a vote for higher taxes on the rich is a vote for fewer yachts and more saved lives. This is how you make the already shaky appeal of Republican flat tax proposals and the right's regressive tax philosophy crumble. And it also pointed out, just this past year, Republicans were supposed to ride their top-heavy 2017 tax cut to victory in the midterms. Instead, they ran away from them when it turned out the public overwhelmingly thought the tax bill was written to favor the rich. So I think the tide is turning on, like, this taxation is theft philosophy, and people are really seeing the blatant wealth inequality in America and how the system just isn't working for a huge proportion of our citizens. And also there was a poll when asked if the tax rate on income from work should be lower than the tax rate on income from wealth, the opposite of our current tax system, a whopping 75% of Americans agree, including 77% of Democrats, 71% of Republicans, and 84% of independents. So the system that favors like passive income or unearned income just isn't working for us. And I think a lot of people are pulling the wool from their eyes and really seeing that something needs to be done.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about some of that in just a couple minutes. I mean, what did we think of some of the reactions, though, to this? I mean, as with any of these, the ones we're going to be talking about, because the pundit class makes the amount of money necessary to get hit by this in most cases, you know, $10 million a year or whatever in this case, a lot of them were quite upset about it. You know, I think the sort of number one thing that we saw was people, I mean, I think that they understand what a marginal tax is and are just lying straight up, but like basically trying to make it sound like that, you know, that AOC was proposing a 70% tax on all income for everyone as opposed to only the income earned over $10 million. So if you're not making $10 million, this is an irrelevant tax. It doesn't apply to you at all. And if you are making over $10 million, it's just not, I mean, it's not 70% on $10 million. It's 70% above $10 million for, you know, every dollar earned above the threshold. That's just sort of basic, like, marginal tax stuff that everyone should know at this point, and certainly anybody making the kind of money to be affected by this does know what that is. And I mean it just so disingenuous, the amount of people just sort of straight up lying about it in you know, social media or articles or whatever, right?
I think there are some that don't quite get it, because like I think there have been stories of people turning down like raises and stuff because they're afraid that they're going to get bumped into higher taxes or whatever when it's just marginal.
Yeah, I mean the time where that actually applies is not the issue of marginal tax rates. It's if they would get disqualified from benefits, right? Like if someone's going to make too much money to qualify for Medicaid or WIC or welfare or whatever, you know, and that's an issue, especially people with disabilities often facing that, you know, if they make too much money, they'd suddenly lose all their disabilities assistance and stuff, you know, which in many cases is paying for like wheelchairs and other things like that. Like that's a huge serious problem, but that's not the same thing as a marginal income tax increase.
Yeah. Right, right. I think we'll talk about some of the other reactions, say at Davos a bit later, but there was an interesting article in Vanity Fair talking up to some sort of liberals on Wall Street. They're saying, oh, yeah, we love Alexandria. You know, we'll figure out the details later, but she's exciting Democrats, so that's good, right? I guess.
Yeah, just trying really hard not to sound insanely bitter.
Well, they're like, I don't have an issue with having a real debate that trickle-down economics, which worked in the 1980s, no longer works.
When did it work in the 1980s? How do these people even call themselves liberals? All right, whatever. Let's keep moving here. Let's talk about the wealth tax now. You know, obviously, a lot of this stuff, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, is stuff that, you know, Bernie Sanders had proposed in various forms previously. But, you know, there's other people in that sort of sphere now. Nate, you wanted to talk about Elizabeth Warren's proposed wealth tax of 3% on wealth of $50 million or more.
Yeah, so Warren rolled out her ultra-millionaire tax proposal for sort of the accumulated wealth. So different than just the marginal income rates, it's going after, as you mentioned, Bill, 2% on persons' assets over $50 million and 3% over $1 billion. Okay. The program plan was developed at UC Berkeley, professors there, and they estimate it would raise $2.75 trillion over 10 years. So basically this article sort of contrasts it a bit here in the Globe about, you know, what's different between the Cortez tax plan and this is, I mean, but this is not that surprising considering this has sort of been in Warren's wheelhouse for, you know, a while since she's sort of come into the national scene, although this is sort of a concrete broad-based proposal and obviously she's running for president now. So that's a pretty big impact there, but
yeah, I mean, and, you know, like, as you said, there is a difference between taxing wealth versus taxing income. I mean, in many cases, the richest people aren't really making standard income anyway, which, as we'll, you know, say, you know, the one thing we're not seeing right now is significant proposals of what to do with capital gains taxes. You know, and capital gains is the way that a lot of the, you know, richest of the rich turn those piles of wealth into additional wealth without that much effort. You know, Thomas Piketty had said in his book that on average, capital has an annual return of 4 to 5%. So even if you're getting that 2% tax or that 3% tax, that is still less than the 4 to 5% gains that are being made. So even with this tax, the wealth is still going to be increasing. But of course, you target that wealth with a wealth tax on the basis that targeting income inequality alone, whether it's standard income or capital gains income, is not really going to solve the problem that some of the people already have a giant amount of wealth hoarded, and you could turn off the spigot for them tomorrow and they'd still be, you know, so much vastly richer than everyone else that that has all these social consequences. So going, you know, these are not contradictory plans. These are complementary plans to target income versus wealth. And, you know, it is important to target the wealth and to target the capital gains in order to reduce inequality overall, not just in income inequality.
Yeah. So Howard Schultz, former Starbucks CEO, who's been having a normal one for the past week or so, you know, he was very upset about this and also the AOC plan and say, oh, this is so ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. Then you also had, I think, Bloomberg saying that Warren's plan is probably unconstitutional, adding that there is already a disturbing model for redistributing wealth. It's called Venezuela, he said during a recent trip to New Hampshire. And you mentioned, Bill, yesterday she had a sort of comeback for this on Twitter.
Yeah, she tweeted out an op-ed that was in favor of her wealth tax plan. That the headline there was, you know, something along the lines of not only is it constitutional, but it's necessary. And she tweeted out using the weird Donald Trump phrase, very legal and very cool. I mean, you know, the reaction to this plan and the AOC plan, I mean, it's just totally absurd. Like you said, Howard Schultz and Mike Bloomberg having giant meltdowns about this. You know, I think the other thing that we saw is so we talked about with the AOC thing, right? There's some confusion over the marginal tax issue and what that means and like understanding what a marginal tax rate is. But there's also just a lot of people being really disingenuous. The reaction that I saw from some conservative pundits to the Elizabeth Warren wealth tax, they just seemed really stupid, and as opposed to being obfuscation centered and like trying to, you know, confuse people on this. There was one guy that was like, you know, trying to basically contend that, and this is setting aside the issue of the wealth growing at 4 to 5% every year anyway, was like, well, you know, if you keep taxing people at 3% or 2% or whatever, eventually they won't have any money left. And it's like, that's not how percentages work or thresholds. Like if the tax is 2% per year on wealth stockpile above 50 million, well, if you have $51 million and there's no growth over the course of the year, you take away 3%, that gets you, you know, down to a I think even below the 50 million, and then that cuts off the tax, so the next year you won't pay it at all. But if you, so let's say you had $55 million or something, you tax that 2% or whatever, and now it's a little bit less the next year. Well, guess what? The 2% tax is not 2% of the original amount. The 2% tax the second year is 2% of the amount you still have. Like, so it gets smaller every year until it drops down to that cutoff, if it ever gets there, and then you don't have to pay it anymore. So why are we even having this conversation? Like, that's just an absurd, like, I mean, it doesn't sound like they understand what percentages are. It sounds like they think that, you know, that if you had a 2% tax, that, you know, in 50 years, you would have eliminated someone's wealth entirely because, you know, 2 times 50 is 100. Like, that's not how anything works. How do you not understand basic percentages like that? And again, I think that some of them are genuinely just too stupid to understand this. There are, of course, people, though, that are just being really disingenuous and, like, not acknowledging that there's a threshold or whatever. But again, that's forcing these pundits, whether they're quote unquote liberals or just straight up conservatives, to get out there in the media and tell the American people that it's bad to tax wealth of $50 million or more or $1 billion or more. Like, the average American is not going to side with you on that. Like, there, you know, there's a case to be made that people, if you're saying like, oh, you know, income tax rate on $10 million or more, like maybe people are like, oh yeah, maybe someday I'll be making like a few million dollars a year or whatever. Now they're probably not, but whatever. Maybe they think that. Very few people are like, oh yeah, someday soon I'm going to have $50 million. Like, this is ludicrous. Yeah. And you know, you're forcing these people to go on the record and actually defend people having billions of dollars. And most Americans don't really side with that.
Yeah, Bill, I think the polling bears this out, because there was a Business Insider poll and found that the Warren tax plan was quite popular, and even more so than the 70% marginal tax rate plan. So basically they found that 54% of respondents approved of the idea, while just about 19.1% disapproved. Then 14.7% were undecided. 76% of liberals supported. 56% of people who identified as neither liberal nor conservative approved of the idea. And only 8% of the people in the centrist ideological group disapproved. So for most people that aren't conservatives, 45% of conservatives disapproved the idea. But for pretty much other than those who aren't conservatives, they're fine with it, it seems like.
Rachel, your comments on the wealth tax?
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate, economists estimate it would raise $2.75 trillion over a decade.
How are you going to pay for it?
Yeah, if we keep asking how are we going to pay for things, that's how. And I think it's very difficult to conceptualize $2.75 trillion. So I think most people who are against this just don't, I think it's just so hard to wrap your mind around such a huge number. I think people have said, like, you could stack the money and reach the moon and back like 2 or 3 times with that amount of money. It's so hard to conceptualize. And I think we just really need to hammer that point home. $2.75 trillion. And we could pay for so many programs that would help everybody.
Senator Sanders, as part of his upcoming presidential campaign, second attempt, he, you know, has rolled out a package of various taxes, some of them overlapping, you know, a top marginal tax, income tax on $10 million or more, and to offshore tax havens, his Wall Street speculation tax that he proposed last time. He also had a lower threshold for wealth taxes. So, you know, where $50 million was Warren's threshold, he's saying $21 million. But he also is proposing an estate tax. We did a whole episode on estate taxes on this show previously. You know, people should check that out if they haven't heard it yet. We talked about it in the context of using estate taxes on the wealthy to finance a system of elder care and long-term disability care in this country. His proposal was a 65% tax on estates of $1 billion or more, and that's to prevent that, you know, giant transfer of intergenerational wealth that, you know, like, it's, you want to encourage intergenerational transfer of wealth, for people who are lower on the income and wealth spectrum, as we talked about on the elder care related episode. That's one reason why you would want to use an estate tax to fund things like elder care, so that people don't burn through all of their money covering, you know, nursing home expenses and stuff, and then not be able to leave anything for their, you know, low income or lower middle income children and grandchildren. But, you know, 65% on estates of $1 billion or more, like that's intended to take a pretty big chunk out of it at one time, as opposed to just the wealth tax every year. And that's to say that it's basically immoral to be able to pass on, you know, billions of dollars to your children and grandchildren. You know, that is not in any way an equal footing for people to start out on, and not even anything close. The other thing, as I said, that we haven't heard too much about so far would be a pretty significant capital gains tax increase. I think that's the part that might make the Wall Street people really start to flip their lids pretty bad. You know, again, 10% of all the national income every year is going to the top 1% in the form of capital gains income. The other thing to remember is that not that many people almost half of Americans have some form of investment in the stock market and so forth, which is going to come back as some capital gains if their valuation is increasing, et cetera. But like a majority of Americans do not. And even among the percentage that do, most of that is concentrated in very narrow hands. And again, you could have some sort of a tiered system there probably as well, like with the standard income taxes, and say like that, you know, if your capital gains are this small amount, then it's this, you know, minor 15% tax or whatever like we have now. But that, you know, if you're making a capital gains of, you know, $1 million, $2 million, or $5 million, $10 million a year or whatever, that is maybe going to get taxed at a higher rate. And I think, again, I think most people would be pretty okay with that. The final thing we wanted to talk about in our remaining several minutes here is the reaction to this, specifically from the richest of the rich. We did talk a little bit about Mike Bloomberg and Howard Schultz from Starbucks and them having public meltdowns about this. I mean, to the point where Howard Schultz is saying, like, I'm thinking about running for president as an independent. I have no policies or ideas or positions on anything except that I don't like AOC's tax plan and I don't like Elizabeth Warren's tax plan. I mean, there's all kinds of levels of delusion happening there to begin with, but like that's pretty just nakedly spectacular in terms of how mad you are about this. The other thing was the Davos stuff that was happening, which that whole process kicked off with a pre-meeting of the Davos attendees at the Palace of Versailles in France. The second annual Davos meeting at the Palace of Versailles, hosted by President Emmanuel Macron.
The Sun King himself.
The Sun King, Jupiterian God President of France, who has faced enormous protests and riots in France this year over a lot of his very unpopular policies for a range of reasons. And the theme of his speech this year was explicitly, not even like a joking reference or whatever, but explicitly, how do we avoid the fate of Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, the former inhabitants of this palace?
They're marching to Versailles right now, guys.
Yeah, and the message that he gave was, the important thing is to stay the course. I'm going to continue what I've been doing over the last 18 months of my, you know, presidency that's made everyone insanely angry, and that Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI would not have been executed if they had stayed the course on reforms.
Stay the course right to the Place de Concorde. So.
Yeah. then the attendees, the richest of the rich, and the few people that they deigned to let speak to them despite not being billionaires and multimillionaires, traipsed their way over to Davos for their annual think tankery and so forth. The Dell founder, Michael Dell, was explicitly asked about Ocasio-Cortez's proposed tax. And in addition to the audience bursting out laughing at the premise of that being, you know, something they might support, he then answered, you know, that not only was he not supportive, but he said, name a country where that's worked ever. Washington Post says co-panelist and MIT professor Eric Bjørnjolfsson jumped in to offer an answer, the United States, because, of course, a 70% tax on income over $10 million is a lot less than the previous marginal income tax rate of 90% on incomes over $1 million. So that was sort of a ludicrous thing. Then there was another panel where the former Yahoo CFO Ken Goldman got dressed down pretty badly because he was complaining about these various things or whatever. And then this historian from the Netherlands, Bregman, Rutger Bregman, he said, "It feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water. Just stop talking about philanthropy and start talking about taxes. We can invite Bono once more, but we've got to be talking about taxes. That's it. Taxes, taxes, taxes. All the rest is BS, in my opinion." And then Vox notes that his book Utopia for Realists is a passionate argument for UBI, open borders, and a 15-hour work week as important and achievable goals. There was a Vox interview with him after this incident at Davos, and Bregman observes that, quote, "Philanthropy is not a substitute for democracy or proper taxation or a good welfare state. I don't want to live in a society where we are dependent on the charity of one guy and his wife for something like that. That's not what a just society looks like in my mind. In any just society, philanthropy should play a very small role. You need a strong welfare state, strong governments, so that together you can democratically decide on what you want to do." So that was sort of the core of the reaction there at Davos. We also heard speeches from Greta Thunberg, the Swedish student teenager who's been organizing student strikes all across Europe against climate change in action. And she gave a very critical address, basically taking them all to task for doing absolutely nothing and flying their private jets around the world to come to this conference and say, "Oh, what a terrible thing global warming is," and then not doing anything about it. The other thing that, you know, has come up in a lot of this discussion is that there's a lot of discussion of the possibility of capital flight. These people at Davos saying, well, if they impose this tax, I would just leave the country with my money. First of all, no, they won't. Like, they're too tied into the system. Very few percentage wise. There's a Guardian article from a few years ago. Very few of them actually do relocate, either between states within the United States or out of the country. Worldwide, it's pretty uncommon for people to actually change their stuff. Second of all, you prevent the capital flight stuff by not just harmonizing the regulations and laws across the different countries to crack down on tax evasion and avoidance, but also just saying, like, hey, you're making all of your money off of the, you know, functions of the U.S. economy. I've talked about this before, right? If you're using the highway system, the shipping systems, security systems, the benefiting from the U.S. military, if you're benefiting from the U.S. court system to conduct all of your business and everything, you're benefiting enormously from the United States. You don't get to just move yourself and your money out of there. If you have any U.S. operations or you benefit from it, then we can just pass a law and say that you don't actually get to take the money with you. Like, it's pretty simple. You can fix that. That's a fixable thing. Rachel, your thoughts in terms of the ultra wealthy reaction to these proposals coming from places like Davos?
I really enjoyed watching Bregman dunk on that former Yahoo CFO. He's just like, oh no, us poor millionaires and billionaires, we're so demonized and we're made to look so bad for hoarding massive amounts of wealth. So I think that video published by Now This Media is a really valuable video to watch. And also, I think it's extremely tone deaf to be whining and complaining about how they're made to look bad while sitting atop, like, literal dragon hordes of money. So I think they'd do well to think about Versailles and what happened there. And what could happen in the future if this current level of inequality exists and is perpetuated.
Also in that video, there was another interesting comment by a member of Oxfam, Winnie Byanyima, who sort of talked about seeing, you have garment workers in, say, Bangladesh talking about how they're working their fingers to the bone, and then they're fired when they get pregnant. And then she made the contrast to, actually really comparison to workers in America who are working at, say, poultry factories and have to wear diapers because they're not getting any bathroom breaks, and just showing how the world over, you know, in third world countries, first world countries, that workers are being exploited and not getting their actual value of their labor. So basically that, you know, she's using that as sort of a real world application of and refutation of some of these, like the Yahoo CEO's points there. Also, Jane Goodall was on this panel. There's like a monkey with a banana plushie just chilling. So, interesting panel overall.
All right. Well, aux armes citoyens, formez vos bataillons. All right. Nate, thanks for being here in studio.
Thank you, Bill.
And Rachel, thanks for being on the line.
Thanks, Bill. Always a pleasure.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFD Radio or email AFDradio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from arsenalfordemocracy.com on Tuesdays. You can hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Tuesday at noon Eastern. Our theme music was composed for us by Stuntberg. If there are articles or papers discussed in an episode, we usually post links to them on arsenalfordemocracy.com along with each episode. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message.